The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. The Mark Reardon Show.
There's no big energy coming out of the Democratic Party.
Shock, disgust, happiness, sweat, a little bit of lust, baby.
It's go time. It's go, no go, lock and load, love him and leave him, smoke him if you got him, see you when I see you, because it's time for Mark Reardon time.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
No, that is not Hunter Biden after his plea deal. That's live from Houston this afternoon. And by the way, that's not my son's baby. That's my son, because he doesn't know how to handle all this. Yeah, it was 3 a.m. this morning that apparently I became a grandfather. My son, Evan, in Houston, and his lovely girlfriend, Natalie, became parents. Idris James Reardon was born at 3 a.m.
That name is so awesome. Mark, congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. 8 pounds, 5 ounces, by the way.
So cute.
I don't think I was given the measurement. Hey, look, the way I look at it, anything that's bigger than the 7-pound bass I have on my wall, that's a big baby for sure. But it's so funny because, not to reveal too much, but we might as well just be honest here. Sue, you don't often see me when I was going to say when I don't have clothes on, but I guess what I was going to say is
that's true. The
Reardon family, the men in the Reardon family have a lot of hair, okay?
Oh,
let's just put it that
suit.
Way.
Yes.
I had friends, this is sadly a true story, I'm not making this up, but I had friends when I was a kid, like when I was 9, 10, 11 years old, even when I was that young. Well, I had to be older. No, I had to be older than that in my teens because it had to be puberty. But they called me the missing link. Like, they called me Link. I'm not even making that up.
Well, let's talk about your legs.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, thank you, Fred.
Oh, that's right.
Fred notices my legs. Sue doesn't. I often don't show them off here. But Fred, as bad as that can be, like, my son looked like, Evan looked like, he was the missing link. I'm just telling you, they're never, ask Alexa, my daughter, never seen so much hair. So this kid comes out with all kinds of hair. And he's got, if I zoom in on the pictures, he's got hair on his arm. And Evan goes, he's got hair on his back. I don't even have hair on my back. So, but babies tend to lose that.
Right.
So not unexpected. But anyway,
this
a
is
big day.
So exciting.
You know, they had to induce her and then they did a C-section. It was not an emergency C-section, but they just could not get that, the dilation to grow or whatever. I'm not a doctor, nor do I play one on the radio.
It seemed like it there.
But everything's good now.
When did you find out?
Well, I sent him a message last night because they were at the hospital and I was getting tired. So I said, hey, what's the update before I go to sleep? I'm pretty sure he blew that message off. And then the first thing I saw this morning was, the announcement. So, and he had sent a couple of pictures.
Coming up in Sue's News, we have many choices for you. We have dug into all kinds of research to come up with names that you should be called for Grandpa.
That is awesome. Well, I will consider all of those. And I don't think anything has been determined at this point, but congratulations to my son. And
that's
what I've said, and I said this when he told me, and I shared this with the audience, and I shared this with him, so it's not anything I'm telling the audience that I wouldn't say to him. I said, look, I can make a pretty strong case that you cannot take care of yourself at the age of 27, let alone an infant. But in a weird way, I think this is going to be good. Yes.
Yeah.
I think I have a lot more calmer feeling about this because Natalie, his girlfriend, has a big, big family in Houston, and that, you need support. Look, life changes. And I remember, Fred, I don't know how much you remember when your kids were little. And thankfully, when Alexa came, all this was out of my system, and I never got that frustrated. But I remember Evan in particular. I'm going to talk to him about this. I was in Milwaukee. I remember my house up there. I just couldn't get him to stop crying. I mean, it was, this is what happens. He was colicky. And I remember, this is shameful, but I'm just going to tell you. I remember screaming at the top of my lungs, stop crying! There might have been an F-bomb in that. Now, that does you no good whatsoever.
No.
He kept crying. And I know that now. I was, whatever I was at the time, 32 years old. And it was frustrating. It was hard. It really was hard. Yeah. So, you know, parenting is not an easy job. We know that. And I'm going to get into some of that in the next segment here as we talk about what happened down in Georgia, which is just when you hear this information this afternoon, oh my God. Once again. So I'm going to share that. But let me lay out the show. We got Kilmeade coming up. The other thing, I referenced Hunter Biden. Fred, can you tell me what the hell happened with Hunter Biden today? Because there's been a little back and forth on this, right?
Yeah, you're right. He surprised everyone. He showed up in court in L.A. today and went up to the judge and said that he wanted to take a special plea that doesn't admit guilt but says you'll accept the penalty.
What's interesting about that is, Fred, I don't even remember hearing too much in the past about this thing called an Alford plea. But you know what? We heard about it 2 weeks ago with this Marcellus Williams thing.
Right.
So Brad Young is going to come on this afternoon. It's funny because it's back-to-back Alford plea things. But I mentioned there's back and forth because that seemingly was the goal. But then there were reports that he's going to plead guilty. And then the prosecutor came on and said, look, we're not down with this.
Right.
Are they in court right now? That's what we
think.
Yeah,
they're still in court battling it out, trying to see if the judge will accept it.
All right, well, we're going to get to that, and Kilmeade is going to have some thoughts on that as he joins us here in just a few minutes as well. I mentioned this yesterday. I'm very much looking forward. Paul Coletti's coming in. Paul is a producer, a journalist with the British Broadcasting Company, the BBC, and he does the news hour on the BBC World Service. He told me they have, Fred, 490 outlets worldwide, but they don't have the NPR station, the government-subsidized station here in St. Louis. So the BBC is here to do a live broadcast to kind of lobby the station here, and they're interviewing Jane and I on Sunday afternoon. We're trying to pick a location right now. We're going to sit down and talk about what makes the Midwest unique, Midwest politics. They're also covering the abortion issue, but our friend Mark Sutherland, who has sort of an official title with the British government, being here in St. Louis as a representative, he mentioned to the BBC that Jane and I would be good choice. We're going to sit down, and Paul's going to come in here and talk to us about all this in the next hour. Also, I mentioned yesterday this thing with Danville, Illinois, and how all the COVID relief money went for a water park. We had to cancel Jacob Lane yesterday because we didn't have time. We had the news conference from down in Georgia. Brad Young will be here in the 5 o'clock hour, and then I cannot wait for football tonight. I'm so excited. The Chiefs and the Ravens. Alex Gold, we've gotten to know him with Kansas City 610 Sports Radio. I've talked to Alex quite a bit about the gambling issue here in Missouri, but he's going to give us a Chiefs preview. Plus, of course, an audio cut of the day. All right, let me get to what happened yesterday and what we now know about this 14-year-old that was arrested after the mass killing. And four people dead, two teachers, two kids, unfortunately. Now we know. Look, KJP gets up there right away. What does everyone want to talk about? I saw something today. Lisa Clancy, the nut job, the lone remaining nut job on the St. Louis County Council. They all want to talk about guns, right? Well, I want to talk about mental illness because I think that there is a crisis with mental illness, especially with young people in this country. It's the reason that all these young girls think that they're boys and vice versa. That is a mental illness, nothing more. And it's really, really frightening. And you don't have the resources because even as an adult, maybe it's even worse as a kid, if you think you need psychological help or a psychiatrist, it's very, very difficult to get, you know, into a meeting. Look, I'm be honest with you, 12, 13 years ago when I had a crisis, when I was in the depths of some pretty bad anxiety and depression, I used privilege. I called a favor in, and I was very lucky to get in with someone right away. Not everyone can do that, and I have an appreciation for that. But in this particular case, the way they describe this with this kid is that he had been begging for months for mental health help.
Oh, gosh.
So, or his family had been before doing this yesterday. Annie Brown is his aunt. And told the Washington Post he was begging for help from everyone around him. The adults around him failed. This is not about guns, ladies and gentlemen. This is about a kid in a family who is deeply troubled. And if his, you know what his middle name was? Red Flag. His middle name essentially is Red Flag. Because when you hear what I'm about to tell you, you're going to say, how in the world did this happen? So we now know that he and his family had multiple previous contacts with local child services. Now, this was when the kid was 12 and 13.
I was going to say, over what?
And yeah. I know. Well, I'll get into that here. Okay. So I don't know if this had to do with the pandemic, but this was a kid who didn't really finish eighth grade because of absenteeism. He had just started ninth grade. I guess they had to do something to kind of round out last year. And then he starts ninth grade this year. And they started that school about 5 weeks ago. We know he's a student there. He was interviewed in May of last year, by law enforcement officers in neighboring Jackson County. They were investigating online threats to carry out a school shooting. At the time, this kid told authorities, and he expressed concern that someone is accusing him of threatening to shoot up a school. And he told authorities at the time that he would never say such a thing, even in a joking manner. He clearly lied about that. So, by the way, the reason this came on the radar of officials is because there was a tip to the Jackson County, Georgia Sheriff's Office. The FBI tipped them about a threat to open fire in a local middle school. The comments were made on social media, and it was called Discord. I don't really know much about Discord, but it was an account associated with an email address that the FBI now admits was owned by the teen or his family. He told officers at the time that he had previously used Discord, but he got rid of his account. Again, this is an interview that was done last year. This isn't something that we're finding out right now. He was afraid someone would use his information for nefarious purposes. So the FBI flags the account. They call Jackson County, right? The profile name, this is interesting too. You know what the profile name was of this account? It was written in Russian. And when translated, it spelled out It spelled out L-A-N-Z-A, Lanza. You know what that references?
Nope.
Adam Lanza, the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooter.
Oh, gosh.
Colin Gray is the father. He told police at the time that he was unfamiliar with Discord. He had no knowledge of the email address associated with Discord. He also said that his son does not know or speak Russian, according to the records. He said that he allowed his son to use his hunting rifles when supervised, but that the child, who was just 13 at the time, did not have unfettered access to them. The weapons were kept in the house. So they did an investigation here. One officer urged the father to keep the firearms locked away and advised him on May 21st to keep the teen out of school until the matter could be resolved. Now, I don't know. I think this is last year. Okay, I'm going to stick with me here on the time frame. All right, I think that they're talking about May 21st, but I could be wrong about that. The story goes on. On May 23rd, the investigator noted that the case would be exceptionally cleared because they put that in quotes, exceptionally cleared because the tip alleging Colt's role in the threat could not be substantiated. Officers were unable to confirm that the Discord account was linked to Colt Gray, and information included in the FBI tip was, according to the records, unreliable. The officers noted that the FBI tip included a brief physical description of the suspect that did not match the teen's appearance, okay? And they don't know exactly what that, you know, physical appearance description was. The father of Colt Gray told officers that he and his wife had split up after their family was evicted from their home a few months earlier. Oh. The father said that he and his son had moved and that while his son experienced some problems at the middle school, things had gotten better now that he was attending a new school. It's unclear when the teenager stopped attending that other school. That was Jefferson Middle School. The grandfather tells the Washington Post that he would have never thought his grandson capable of violence. He says that they had not spoken in a year, but he said, look, I was his baseball coach. He was an overall good kid. So that's what we know at this point. But that is, by the way, That's about 100 million times more than we know about the kid who attempted the assassination attempt, which I still think is really weird. We don't know anything about that guy.
Yeah, you try to kill an ex-president, we don't know anything.
Nothing. Yeah. Now, this all comes out, but it's extremely revealing. And, you know, we're going to find out more. I think it's a little too early to judge the police agencies because it does seem like there was conflicting information. It seems like they followed through with an investigation, but when they found out that, you know, whoever called the tip in, the description did not really match that. So I guess they kind of closed it and they said it was unreliable. But when you look at that information now with, you know, hindsight, that's quite stunning. It really is. We don't, Fred, I don't think I heard today if we know what kind of gun was used. Are they still not saying?
No, I haven't heard a news conference at all today.
Well, we'll see if we get more information. But wow, that is something else, I think, that we don't know We don't know more about all that situation. So that's kind of the latest in the shooting story. We're still following Hunter Biden. Brian Kilmeade's going to have some more on that. In fact, let's take a break and let's get to Mr. Kilmeade. Don't forget, tomorrow we got a Reardon Roundtable to round all this stuff up. Jane will be here, State Rep Donna Behringer, and Sean Flower, the mayor of Eureka. That's tomorrow at 3 o'clock.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Did you like that dead air there? That was my fault. I'd like to blame someone else because I always prefer to blame someone else.
Oh, sure.
I know. Especially my wife. But I was supposed to say, this portion of the show is sponsored by Jerry Kelly Heating and Air Conditioning. Don't forget, we have a Thursday edition of Sue's News coming up in the next hour. And then our new friend from the BBC, Paul Coletti, will kind of explain why the BBC is in town. Brian Kilmeade is on the horn with us this afternoon, the co-host of Fox and Friends. You hear his show every morning here on 97.1 FM Talk. Mr. Kilmeade, how are you this afternoon?
What's going on, Mark?
I just became a grandfather today, so that's my breaking news. My son in Houston just had a baby at 3 a.m. this morning. Actually, his girlfriend, just to be clear.
Well, how great is that? There's nothing better than news when you wake up to that.
It is exactly what I woke up to, for sure. So that was great news. Well, listen, I want to talk about some things that are going on in your world. I know you interviewed Bibi today, and we'll talk about Trump. But, Brian, I just spent some time here in the monologue reading some of the information we now know about this 14-year-old kid in Georgia. And the things, I'm not going to say that law enforcement ignored this, because they clearly, we now know they investigated this in the spring of last year. But some of this is rather stunning that we're finding out. There were red flags everywhere.
I mean, the fact the FBI last year met him, you know, met with him, and he denied. They said, well, what's going on? There's a threat coming from the school, from this game, these gamers. So, yeah, this one kid is threatening to shoot up a school. They wouldn't see him because that's not me, and they let him go. Now, we had Paul Morrow on today. He said, like, you really don't have much of a choice. I'm like, I don't get it. What do you mean you don't have much of a choice? He goes, well, he's 13 years old. He's a minor.
Yeah.
And it's an allegation. It's a statement. But then again, I'm thinking to myself, wait a second. But so what? He's 13. And it's the forensics. I mean, forensics could unmask somebody using a phone in a cave in Afghanistan. If you're talking to the kid, you know it's him. You know he's lying to you. So as a non-policeman, non-investigator, I'm perfectly willing to be corrected. But if you're in the guys, if you're talking to the kid, and he denies it, you know that he did it. So
yeah.
What is stopping you from putting him in some type of detention? That's the same thing, if I remember correctly, in Buffalo. They knew this kid was nuts. They knew he was going to kill people. But the next thing you know, they talked to him. They were watching him. He ends up heading up to Buffalo. He's a racist. And starts shooting people randomly in a mall who happen to be black. That happened, it's probably easily for people to forget, but that happened probably 3 years ago now.
Right. Well, and even Audrey Hale, and you know, the manifesto got released this week in Tennessee for the Audrey Hale thing. I don't know how many people were dialed into what she was going through, but she was in severe mental distress, and she was 28 years old, and there should have been people around her that would have been, you know, aware of that, and apparently they weren't, or nobody reported that.
The same thing. What I like to do, it was my suggestion today, is I like to talk, instead of saying the FBI sucks, which they don't, what do you need, guys? What do you need? How could I empower investigators, police, to take action? You know, the red flag laws, I was talking to people today, two of which are very conservative. The red flag laws have worked in Florida. They said, well, the Second Amendment, you're going to be taking away my guns. My ex-wife's mad at me. He's going to say I got threatened. I'm threatening her so because they know I love to shoot, I love to hunt, so I'll take my guns away. Yeah, there's always a risk of people making things up to get you back. I got it. But the red flag laws are working with very little abuse in Florida, and that's a conservative state, as everybody knows. So I'm just wondering, what do they need to be able to stop that 13-year-old before he shoots people at 14?
Well, this is where the conversation should really head, everything you just said, because, of course, yesterday the first thing that comes out of KJP's mouth is about guns, and, you know, you see that even locally here with politicians trying to virtue signal. But I think you have some pretty serious issues that you can dial in on and try to come up with solutions for.
Yeah, I mean, number one is, and I talked to Cornyn, he took a lot of heat. He did some, I thought, common sense reform. Sorry about some idiots on my block.
That's okay.
But he did some common sense. He did some common sense along with some other Republicans, gun reforms. And a lot of people, a lot of conservatives upset by it. But they really didn't do anything wrong. I thought he looked at what was going on in his state. How do we prevent that? What could we do? And he made some minor adjustments. And they were really happy. Senator Murphy, who's big in Connecticut ever since Sandy Hook, said, you know, I'm really pleased Republicans came to work with me. So what does he do? The second time, this is the second big shooting under Biden, and there's both times he goes, Republicans won't come down and use common sense laws when it comes to guns. What are you talking about? Will you at least salute them when they come across, when one party comes across the line? Don't abuse them and make them feel like as if they were, you know, patsies for your agenda.
Yeah, that's disappointing. But I guess in this political environment, not surprising whatsoever. Brian Kilmeade back with us this afternoon. I'm not sure that I can properly and accurately summarize what the hell is going on with Hunter Biden today because it's been somewhat confusing. But what's your take on this? And is it an Alford plea? Is he pleading guilty? Will Joe Biden pardon him? I think that part is kind of obvious at this point, even though he says no.
Well, look, the guy's guilty. He doesn't pay any taxes, did coke. He was flagrant about it. Put it in a laptop that we all were told it was fake, but the audience listening, our audiences, knew it was not a fake laptop. The President Biden knew it wasn't a fake laptop. In it was a how-to guide to find out that Hunter Biden never paid taxes on any of this information. What was going to be revealed is that Joe Biden was all over, profited from it to the tune of maybe $20, $30 million. That's where we're heading. You know, Hunter Biden addicted to drugs, abusing it as a privileged kid, who thought I could do anything, I'm going to get away with everything, who's an addict, is thankfully, it seems he's not now, although we don't know whose cocaine that was in the White House. So now he's called out on it. He basically knows, you got me dead to rights. As I've heard legal experts say in our channel, told me personally, he's got 3 years in prison if this case just goes to trial. 3 years. He's guilty. So now he knows that dad's going to pardon him. So what are you wasting everyone's time for? I like to see the whole thing go to trial, and we'll find out where the money is.
Right, which is why I always kind of expected that it wouldn't go to trial. And I can't see any scenario where he's not going to get a pardon. I think that that's what today is all about.
Exactly.
Why lie to us then, Mark?
Yeah.
Why lie to us? They just said the press secretary yesterday, say there's nothing changes.
Right.
You know, commute, exonerate, pardon. Are they going to use semantics and think we're morons again?
No, but Brian, the president's been fine the last 3 years. There's no cognitive dissonance. There's nothing like that. Nothing to see here. He's not going to drop out of the race either, just so you know. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Unless God Almighty comes down,
right.
or Nancy Pelosi, who's got more power.
Apparently so. All right. Hey, you interviewed Bibi Netanyahu, and you asked him about this report about a ceasefire deal.
It's accurate.
No, it's exactly inaccurate. There's a story, a narrative out there. There's a deal out there. In fact, while we agreed July and in May and July and in August to a deal and to an American proposal, Hamas has consistently said no to every one of them.
So that's counter to the narrative that we're hearing that they may be close to a deal. What other takeaways from that chat this morning, Brian?
Well, number one, I talked to him before we went on and after, and he basically said this. I asked him the question, too. People say that you're delaying a deal to delay your own political career. Because as soon as this is over, you're done. He said,
right.
Absolutely not. And that's never been the scenario. I actually think that's one of the lowest things you could tell anyone. But this is the common scenario, the common jargon that goes on back and forth. So I just thought I'd ask him, let him punt it. And he didn't get insulted by it. He goes, you got to be kidding me. I don't want to extend my political career one extra day. Number two, my other takeaway was he's not leaving that corridor. Who would? You have dozens of tunnels that were discovered, some of which you get tractor trailers down. Egypt let it happen. That was my next question was going to be, how much blame does Egypt get? Iran supplied the material. Egypt supplied the access. Gaza was the place. And the people, the Palestinians, are the one paying the price because most of Hamas stays in the tunnels with the hostages who obviously were being tortured as this woman, his body was found. She was 76 pounds. 76 pounds.
Oh, my.
She's a full adult. Can you imagine what her life was like for the last 300 days?
Yeah.
And the guy?
That is absolutely horrible. Did you ask Netanyahu if he feels like there would be a dramatic difference in what the U.S. might do if there's a different person in the White House, or if he felt like this White House and this administration was wavering a little bit?
two things that I said to her. I said, how much harder did the negotiations get? Well, President Biden said Benjamin Netanyahu is not doing everything he can to get a deal done. And he says, well, that's up to Hamas to find out. For me, I just got to do my job. We know we made it harder because we saw him rant. Number two, he also says that I cannot reward Hamas for killing six people by coming in easier with my terms and conditions. That is the deal. If they want to end this, they could end this tomorrow by surrendering. That is it. So to me, more defiant than ever, because I know he knows he's right. I know he's right. I also spoke to a woman today who's a member of the IDF, whose brother's in for his fourth tour in 300 days, fourth tour. All these people are not professional soldiers. Right. They get drafted like you and I would if we lived over there. And she's probably 24. She's been in twice. Now she's working for a private organization, armored vehicles that could get these guys in and out of war zones when they're injured. Imagine that. So, and remember, Israel's the size of New Jersey. That's it. That's a country. So she was telling me, too, that, you know, we're getting worn out. Life is not like this ever in her life. She's never seen it. She's born in Britain but grew up there. And she says everybody feels they're in a war footing. Everybody.
Well, let me shift to politics here and just get your thoughts. I know Trump had a town hall. I was listening to him today. He did this economic policy speech, and I can't help. This is just an observation, and I said this to Fred earlier, Brian. I said, let's take the issues out of it and just look at the optics, because I see Kamala Harris. She's smiling. Maybe she's cackling, but she has energy. I see Trump up there, and when he's teleprompter Trump, it just doesn't play so well. He looks old. He looks older than he did when he was running against Biden. So what are your anticipations for what might happen on Tuesday night?
Well, number one, I liked it. It was actually full of substance in front of business people who he needs to support, and then he needs them to enact. So then he sit there and took questions against the finest businessmen in the country. Now, I know Kudlow was up there and Scott Bessent, who's been a guest on probably Treasury Secretary if Trump wins. There were people up there that he knew, but people in the audience he didn't, and he's taking questions.
A lot of questions,
so,
yes.
That's pretty cool, right?
Yes.
I mean, this is just like, you know, it's like going into a locker room full of football coaches, giving a speech on how to coach football, and then taking questions from those great coaches. So he knew that these guys are coming at him at a high level. This isn't a bunch of supporters like we were in the audience with Sean last night. Nothing wrong with both scenarios, but it's just a fact. So I don't have, like, in a way, Mark, you're not wrong, but if you're smiling all the time, I feel like you're acting.
Oh, she's acting. There's no doubt that she's acting. I'm just saying, like, from a perception standpoint right now. And by the way, I'll say this, because I listened to the speech and then I listened to most of the Q&A. He was better with the Q&A because he seems, you know, these stump speeches, they get repetitive. He seems less interested when he goes off the page. And this, by the way, used to happen in 2016 and 2020 as well. But I do think that we're going to be in a period here where the momentum has stalled for Harris. And then we'll see if it turns around next week. There's certainly an opportunity for Trump now.
No question. And I'll be talking about that this weekend when I got Stephen Miller on. I got the Ruthless podcast on. And I'll talk about that with Kayleigh McEnany, who worked with him before to get him more of the very debates and speeches, and was actually a CNN contributor in 2016. And 2020, she was back working with him. So she knows what it's like, and he knows when he prepares. And she's got some, she's going to work some sources tonight and tomorrow in order to get some information. I talked to Kelsey Gabbard, says he's already preparing. And I talked to her before the interview, and I said, listen, what exactly are you doing? Because what I'm doing is bringing some heat to him. But we sit. We don't stand. We don't act. I don't pretend to be Kamala Harris. I tell him exactly what her record is, and I tell him exactly how she's going to attack back and attack him. So I go, how do you feel? He goes, he feels confident, and he should. He's ready. And I said, okay.
Yeah, that'll be good. It'll be interesting. The big story, maybe one of the big stories around here, I know you're like a soccer guy, and there's nothing wrong with that. We have our soccer here, but, you know, opening night of the NFL season, the Chiefs and the Ravens tonight, the Packers from the exless Brazil against the Eagles tomorrow night. Brian, I am pumped and ready. You like football, though, like American-style football, don't you?
I can't wait. It's going to be great. But to me, the most interesting thing, and I'm a Giant fan, but the most interesting thing is, can Aaron Rodgers, at 41, take a talented team back to the playoffs?
Yeah, I
mean,
know.
You saw what Jordan Love did. I know it's the Packers. I'm not a Packer guy, but I'm not anti-Packer. Fascinated by their success and sustainability. Now with their third quarterback, because with the team I'm from, forget it. The Giants, that we, even the last 5 years with Eli Manning, was useless. So I look forward to that. I mean, I look forward to the season. I like the analysis. I never get bored with it. I look forward to Tom Brady in the booth. I think that's going to be great.
I'm curious about how that's going to go. Yeah, that'll be interesting for sure.
I think, well, word is he's got all his notebooks from every game. So from every game he played, he would make notes after the game too. So he's bringing that all to the fray. So it's going to be interesting because he does not want to be treated like a 6-time Super Bowl champ. By all accounts, he goes in there very humble, like a rookie, and he's really pumped up to get into it. So you don't expect him to be perfect because he's not expecting it.
Yeah, there's going to be a ramp up.
To correct his mistakes.
Look, there's a lot of hatred out there for Tom Brady. I love the guy. I love the fire that he brings to, you know, competition. And, you know, his record is unbelievable. So I hope he's a good broadcaster. Look, I'm in the camp that loves Tony Romo. I think Romo does a great job on the broadcast, but some people don't like him. By the way, did you watch on the NFL front, before I let you go, did you watch the in-season Hard Knocks with the Giants, Brian?
Loved it.
It was great. Yeah.
Did you? Yeah. I talked to the general manager of the Giants. I said, how do you feel? He goes, I'm so glad it's over.
Yeah.
He said, yeah. He goes, I got a blow back on it. Saquon stuff was not great for us, but everybody wanted us to do it. They told us to do it. I told them this is a scenario. I told them these are going to be real conversations. And that's what they did. So he said, I'm the first. And let's just hope that I have a good season now. Now everybody knows who we are.
Yeah.
What about for your family? And his family was with him. He says his family loved it.
I loved it. I just like what they do on Hard Knocks because it, you know, humanizes these NFL players. They did it with Netflix on receiver and, you know, when they did quarterback last year, and we're ready to go for the NFL season. Kilmeade, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
And don't forget One Nation Saturday night at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock here in St. Louis. Check it out, One Nation with Brian Kilmeade. You'll hear him tomorrow morning here on 97.1 FM Talk. Hang in there. We're coming back. You know, I talked about that yesterday with Merrick Garland's news conference, and they're talking about Russian interference. I don't want to spend one minute talking about Russian interference because, you know what I want to talk about? I want to talk about the Washington Post, the New York Times, and the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and CBS News, and CNN, and their election interference because that's much bigger issue. I don't care what Iran and Russia do with our election interference. Do what they might, right? But
right.
I'm concerned about what our own legacy media with their journalistic malpractice continues to do in this election. And I'm guessing you're going to see it on full display on Tuesday night with this ABC debate. We are hosting another watch party at Dave and Buster's. If you don't have tickets, you're out of luck. Unless we open up some more space because, man, these things book up quickly. They really do. Sue, this morning I did another round of interviews for my podcast because, you know, I'm a podcaster now, as I explained yesterday. Yeah, just to give a little background here, and I was freaking out last night. I'm being serious, and I'll explain why. So the basic story is my friend Chris Smith, who used to call the show, and then he was shot in the head in 2021, the night before Thanksgiving. The woman he was with, Leslie Reeves, up in Farmersville, Illinois, was killed by her crazy ex-boyfriend. The details of the case are just shocking. Chris somehow survived. He was in a coma for 6 to 7 weeks, and then one of the first people he called when he woke up was me, for some reason. And, you know, we've been friends for a long time, and I've been on this journey, you know, a little bit with him along the way. And then when 48 Hours decided to come in and do a story on Chris and they interviewed me, it'll air. I just had a little communication with 48 Hours and their producer today. And they're not selecting an exact date, but it's likely going to be in November because that's the anniversary.
That's the time.
But wow. So the podcast that I'm going to do is on Chris and what happened in on his recovery, which has really been inspirational. Yeah. But last night I was freaking out because, look, I've done a daily talk show on the radio for a long time, decades and decades, right? But the approach on an episodic podcast is different.
Yes, and it is.
So I knew I had done a long interview. We talked for like 2 hours yesterday with Chris. And last night I'm completely freaking out. I'm like, I already screwed this thing up. I don't think
Wait a minute.
Well, because I knew how he answered the questions and I knew what I needed is some sort of hook because what you're going to need is, think about 48 Hours or Dateline, Sue.
Okay.
Keith Morrison.
Yes.
At the beginning of the segment, right? This is sort of like the approach
they
of
fish
the
fish in.
Yeah, they fish you in. They give you a little hook. You know,
they
like,
give you a little hook, but not enough that you know what happened.
Right. But then they go to that commercial,
correct,
and then they come back in the second segment, and then they tell you a little bit more. But that's not all.
Coming
right?
up.
Yes.
They always say, it's Keith Morrison. Coming up.
Coming up. Did. So that's sort of got to be my approach here, so I can't let all the details out of the bag.
Ooh,
so
that's tricky.
I thought, you know, and you know how negative I can be. I'm like, you know what? I screwed this up.
Oh,
and
I'm sure to start it over,
all this stuff. Well, today I had an interview set up with Sharon, Chris's mom. Sharon has been in the studio, and she did chime in a little bit on the microphone here at 97 FM Talk. But if you remember the day she was in here, she was a little shy, and she didn't say a lot. Well, I had to inform Chris today that this particular podcast is no longer about him. It's about his mother because she saved the day this morning. I mean, Sharon rocked this interview out.
Oh, that's awesome.
And she gave me a place to kind of start and piggyback off of. So
love that.
And I'm being serious. She was just, and I had
love
texted
that.
The guy from 48 Hours because I said, look, I had never really interviewed Sharon before. She was a rock star. It was freaking gold. And I'm sure they felt the same way. And he agreed. So now I feel a little bit better
good.
About the podcast. There's also some, I can't say anything, but there's some really interesting news that's emerging on his story. But I have to keep that secret. But I think, you know, we're going to put this together. I'm going to continue to go to work on it. Here's another thing I have, Sue. I have, with what we do here on the radio, we have access to music libraries. We're allowed to play popular music like my bumper music because it's a short snippet. And the radio stations pay ASCAP and BMI fees and stuff like royalty fees.
But for a podcast,
you can't do that. So look, I'm thinking about resources. I got lots of resources. I have my friend Neil Sosik with the Mighty Pines. I have other local musicians who might be able to create some sort of you know, music theme for this.
That would be fantastic. And let me ask you this, laying the whole thing out, do you know how many episodes it's going
to
be?
I don't, but I'm thinking I do want it to be a little bit more, you know, user friendly. So in my mind, I have it at like five episodes, you know, maybe a half hour episodes and go from there. But that could change. I think if you get, you know, too long, maybe even four episodes, I'm going to have to ask for guidance because again, I talked to a good friend of mine who used to babysit my kids, believe it or not, my older kids now. She does Julia Louis-Dreyfus's podcast, and it's on the government-subsidized stations.
Oh.
She's an NPR person. But she even said, hers is not an episodic, right? She goes, that's a different world. What I need to do is hire a producer, someone like Fred who does episodic. Here's the problem. I got no budget for this.
I understand.
But it's still going to be great.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Hang in there. We're coming back. You know, I talked about that yesterday with Merrick Garland's news conference, and they're talking about Russian interference. I don't want to spend 1 minute talking about Russian interference because, you know what I want to talk about? I want to talk about the Washington Post, the New York Times, and the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and CBS News, and CNN, and their election interference because that's much bigger issue. I don't care what Iran and Russia do with our election interference. Do what they might, right? But I'm concerned about what our own legacy media with their journalistic malpractice continues to do in this election. And I'm guessing you're going to see it on full display on Tuesday night with this ABC debate. We are hosting another watch party at Dave & Buster's. If you don't have tickets, you're out of luck. Unless we open up some more space because, man, these things book up quickly. They really do. Sue, this morning I did another round of interviews for my podcast because, you know, I'm a podcaster now, as
how
I explained yesterday.
Yeah,
just to give a little background here, and I was freaking out last night. I'm being serious, and I'll explain why. So the basic story is my friend Chris Smith, who used to call the show, and then he was shot in the head in 2021, the night before Thanksgiving. The woman he was with, Leslie Reeves, up in Farmersville, Illinois, was killed by her crazy ex-boyfriend. The details of the case are just shocking. Chris somehow survived. He was in a coma for 6 to 7 weeks, and then one of the first people he called when he woke up was me for some reason. And, you know, we've been friends for a long time, and I've been on this journey, you know, a little bit with him along the way. And then when 48 Hours decided to come in and do a story on Chris and they interviewed me, it'll air. I just had a little communication with 48 Hours and their producer today, and they're not selecting an exact date, but it's likely going to be in November because that's the anniversary.
That's the time.
But so the podcast that I'm going to do is on Chris and what happened in on his recovery, which has really been inspirational. Yeah. But last night I was freaking out because, look, I've done a daily talk show on the radio for a long time, decades and decades, right? But the approach on an episodic podcast is different.
Yes, and it is.
So I knew I had done a long interview. We talked for like 2 hours yesterday with Chris. And last night, I'm completely freaking. I'm like, I already screwed this thing up. I don't think
Wait a minute.
Well, because I knew how he answered the questions, and I knew what I needed is some sort of hook, because what you're going to need is, think about 48 Hours or Dateline, Sue.
Okay.
Keith Morrison.
Yes.
At the beginning of the segment, right? This is sort of like the approach
they
of the...
They fish in.
Yeah, they fish in. They give you a little hook. You know,
they
like,
give you a little hook, but not enough that you know what happened.
Right. But then they go to that commercial, and then they come back in the second segment, and then they tell you a little bit more. But that's not all.
Coming
right?
up.
Yes.
They always say, it's Keith Morrison. Coming up.
Coming up. Did. So that's sort of got to be my approach here, so I can't let all the details
right.
out of the bag.
Ooh,
so
that's tricky.
I thought, you know, and you know how negative I can be. I'm like, you know what? I screwed this up.
Oh,
I have
sure
to start it over, all this stuff. Well, today I had an interview set up with Sharon, Chris's mom. Sharon has been in the studio, and she did chime in a little bit on the microphone here at 97 FM Talk. But if you remember the day she was in here, she was a little shy, and she didn't say a lot. Well, I had to inform Chris today that this particular podcast is no longer about him. It's about his mother because she saved the day this morning. I mean, Sharon rocked this interview out.
Oh, that's awesome.
And she gave me a place to kind of start and piggyback off of. So
love that.
And I'm being serious. She was just, and I had
love
texted
that.
The guy from 48 Hours because I said, look, I had never really interviewed Sharon before. She was a rock star. It was freaking gold. And I'm sure they felt the same way. And he agreed. So now I feel a little bit better
good.
About the podcast. There's also some, I can't say anything, but there's some really interesting news that's emerging on his story. But I have to keep that secret. But I think, you know, we're going to put this together. I'm going to continue to go to work on it. Here's another thing I have, Sue. I have, with what we do here on the radio, we have access to music libraries. We're allowed to play popular music like my bumper music because it's a short snippet. And the radio stations pay ASCAP and BMI fees and stuff like royalty fees.
But for a podcast.
You can't do that. So look, I'm thinking about resources. I got lots of resources. I have my friend Neil Sosik with the Mighty Pines. I have other local musicians who might be able to create some sort of music theme for this.
That would be fantastic. And let me ask you this, laying the whole thing out, do you know how many episodes it's going
to
be?
I don't, but I'm thinking I do want it to be a little bit more, you know, user friendly. So in my mind, I have it at like five episodes, maybe a half hour episodes and go from there. But that could change. I think if you get, too long, maybe even four episodes, I'm going to have to ask for guidance because again, I talked to a good friend of mine who used to babysit my kids, believe it or not, my older kids now. She does Julia Louis-Dreyfus's podcast, and it's on the government-subsidized stations.
Oh.
She's an NPR person. But she even said, ooh, hers is not an episodic, right? She goes, that's a different world. What I need to do is hire a producer, someone like Fred who does episodic. Here's the problem. I got no budget for this.
I understand.
But it's still going to be great.
Get more at 971talk.com.